ujwayeleke kanja kodwa sinsukwini zanamhlanje sibona kwenzeka kanja amantombazane
She's a rich girl, she don't try to hide it. Diamonds on the soles of her shoes. He's a poor boy, empty as a pocket. Empty as a pocket with nothing to lose. Sing ta-na-na.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Maurice Carney, co-founder and executive director of the Friends of the Congo. He is an independent entrepreneur and human rights activist who has fought with the Congolese for 15 years in their struggle for human dignity and control of their country. And also joining us is Jacques Bahati, the policy analyst for the Africa Faith and Justice Network. He has written and spoken across the United States on the socio-political issues impacting the Democratic Republic of the Congo, Rwanda, Uganda, and Burundi. Welcome to Background Briefing, Maurice Carney and Jacques Bahati.
Thank you. It's a pleasure being with you tonight.
Well, let me begin with Maurice Carney. When your bio says that you have fought with the Congolese for 15 years in their struggle, are you talking about taking up arms?
Definitely not. Friends of the Congo Advocacy Institution based in Washington is a nonviolent, anti-military, peaceful social justice institution. So we firmly ensconced in the principles of nonviolence and social justice change.
Well, today the Washington Post is carrying a story that the U.S. is expanding its secret shadow war in Africa. And also, of course, today the White House announced a new strategy for sub-Saharan Africa focusing on the continent's economic potential. And clearly this strategy comes as a way to perhaps blunt China's growing influence, investment, and trade in Africa. The Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, spoke at the Africa Growth and Opportunity Forum and talked about Africa as a land of opportunity, saying, "I want all of my fellow American citizens, particularly our business community, to hear this. Africa offers the highest rate of return on foreign direct investment of any developing region in the world." Now, let me ask Jacques. My understanding is that one of the problems in the Congo is that foreign companies are basically just looting the place.
Yes, Ian, this is a very frightening situation. Let me start answering this question by saying that recently the representative Miller in the House here in Washington held a hearing to rebuke the conflict mineral law, which would address some of the abuses that goes have been going on for more than a decade, causing more unrest and perpetuating killing. And he said that implementing that law would add more burden to the American companies who are job creators. But he disregarded thousands of Congolese who died. And that is the kind of mindset that we have in leadership here in America, whereas it's about money and less about human rights and the lives of the people. So, indeed, it's a very, very difficult situation that is more than urgent to address the takeover of businesses or the expansion of multinationals across Africa and in Congo in particular, whereas they don't care about the lives of people, and it's just about finances and profit.
So which congressman was that? Was that Gary Miller from out here in California?
Miller, he's the chairman of the subcommittee on monetary trade, international monetary and trade, I believe, yes.
Well,
I'm not sure if he's from California.
Oh, if he's the one from California, he's or been under investigation from the FBI for his own transgressions. But anyway, that's another matter. Maurice Carney, what do you know about what's happening militarily here with the U.S. expanding its secret shadow war in Africa? We know that the a group of special forces have been sent into Uganda to track down Joseph Kony, who's hiding somewhere in the jungles of the Congo across the border. We also know that Rwanda has been prosecuting basically the Tutsi regime that drove out the Hutus, who were responsible for the genocide, have been pursuing them deeper and deeper into the eastern part of the Congo for since the Rwandan genocide. So walk us through that geopolitical scenario of what is the role of the U.S. Special Forces and how does it relate to the government of Rwanda that's pretty much an ally of the United States?
Thank you, Gary, for the question. What's important for your listening audience to understand is that since 2008, there's been an increased militarization effort on the part of the United States government on the African continent. Donald Rumsfeld, Secretary of Defense at the time, in the Bush administration, 2008, established Africa Command, AFRICOM for short. And this initial aim of AFRICOM was to establish bases on the African continent. However, when President Bush traveled to Africa in 2009, he was met with heads of state, and they shared with him in no uncertain terms that they did not wish to see a U.S. military presence on the African continent. Almost all the heads of state rejected the notion of establishment of bases on the African continent, except for probably Ellen Johnson Sirleaf of Liberia. So since this time, and even into the Obama administration, the United States has been seeking ways in order to expand its military footprint on the African continent. It rationalizes this expansion, or initially rationalized expansion, by saying AFRICOM was established to help in humanitarian situations, disasters. However, when we saw the violence break out in Libya, AFRICOM was at the head in leading the bombing on Libya. So the humanitarian mask quickly fell. However, the United States has still been trying to utilize rationale for having a presence on the continent. So they use Al-Qaeda or terrorist groups, and they say they're in pursuit of terrorist groups. When whatever terrorist groups, the bulk of the terrorist groups that are found on the continent, they're local threats and not international threats. So that rationale is not holding up well. They got a boon out of the Kony 2012 video. It's, now they can justify their presence by saying they're chasing after warlords or those wanted by the International Criminal Court. So what we see, however, in spite of the different rationales that are used by the United States, the main reason for expanding U.S. military presence is to protect U.S. strategic and economic interests. And in doing that, they rely on their allies like Rwanda. So Rwanda benefits from intelligence, from training, military equipment, financial resources, in spite of Rwanda's devastating record in the Congo, where it has invaded Congo twice, supported proxy groups inside of the Congo, that has contributed to the death of an estimated 6 million people. However, they continue to benefit from the largest from the United States, whether it's in the form of intelligence, military equipment, training, and even diplomatic and political cover. And that's what we're pushing back against, the militarization of the continent, and the support of strong men such as Rwanda's Paul Kagame. And that's what the progressive groups in Washington are fighting against, and that's what the American public should be aware of, that the U.S. policy on the African continent is not one that is progressive, not one that supports the people, not one that promotes democracy, not one that promotes peace, but one that exacerbates conflict in the region.
So let me ask Jack Bahati, the people that Kagame and the Tutsi government of Rwanda have been waging war against in the Congo are the Hutu that were responsible for the genocide in the first place. So when Maurice says it's the Tutsis that are causing the trouble, these people don't sound like they're exactly pure as snow. And secondly, my understanding is that there's a tremendous United Nations presence there, although they've hardly stopped the killing because I believe there's about 5 million people are being killed.
The killing has not stopped. Every day we are looking at images of women and children killed by different militias, including the FDLR. The Congo has, among its diversity, it has Tutsi people. And they deserve to live in on the Congolese territory as anybody. But after 2009, they voiced their grievances, and the government of Congo failed to follow through some of the grievances. And that has created another discontent. Again, it's about working efficiently and governing. So they are not able to really address the grievances of the warring parties, and they are just they are about their business. They are feasting in Kinshasa and trading here. They are part of the network of conflict mineral instead of governing, and that is causing us problems. Rwanda has been Congo has been a playground of Rwanda for quite some time, and certainly the FDLR pose a threat to Rwanda. It's up to the Congolese government to really find out how it can build a nation that is strong and able to contain the refugees within its borders, and also deal efficiently and collaboratively with its neighbors. So we are dealing with a multifaceted issue, but the Congolese regime is mostly responsible and to blame for the ongoing, mutiny and unrest, because they are not able to sit and think and bring lasting solutions, and it's unfortunate.
So, Maurice Carney, it's just a very cynical situation we're talking about here, where it sort of serves the purpose of the Western interests, multinationals that are exploiting the mineral resources. And as Jacques mentioned earlier, a law to ban conflict minerals, coltan being important for the internet, for the kind of technology that we're using now in terms of cell phones and internet equipment, etc. So, is this? And if you have a U.S. congressman who's saying, "Oh, this is too much of a burden on American industry," it leads you to be very suspicious that that this is a sort of divide and conquer strategy here. It's just as long as there's low-intensity warfare and we can keep extracting the minerals, nobody's going to get their act together as a state, and it's always going to be a failed state and therefore vulnerable to exploitation.
Yeah, and really the onus, I think Jacques hinted towards it, is for the Congolese people to organize in a way that they can protect their interests. Ultimately, that is how sustainable peace and long-lasting peace is going to come about. So the challenge for us here in the U.S. is to shine a light on the situation, but also pressure our government so that it adopts and support policies that expands the political space inside of the Congo. So that the people can play a strong role in shaping the future of the country. And one of the key things that we can do is to demand that the administration cease its support of strongmen in the region, whether it's Kabila inside the Congo, as they've supported Kabila since the last elections in November that Kabila appropriated, but still got the stamp of the United States government, whether it's Kagame in Rwanda, who won his last elections with 93% of the votes in his country. So here we go, the U.S. supporting another undemocratic regime, whether it's Museveni in Uganda. So we see a pattern where the United States has supported non-democratic regimes in the region, regimes that stifle the political space inside their countries, which serves as a breeding ground for conflict. So probably the biggest thing that we can do on the outside is to pressure our government so that they cease their support of strongmen in the region.
Well, I'm afraid, gentlemen, we've run out of time here, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we're out of time, and I thank both of you for joining us.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Again, I've been speaking with Maurice Carney, co-founder and executive director of Friends of the Congo, and also Jacques Bahati, policy analyst for the Africa Faith and Justice Network. I'd like to thank producer Chris Scheid. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another background briefing. Bye for now.
An angel song about the home of the brave and this land here around the free. One time, one night in America. A lady dressed in white with a man she loved. Standing along the side of the pickup truck. A shot rang out in the night. Just when everything seemed right. Another headline written down in America. The guy that lived next door in 305 took the kids to the park and disappeared.